And now, the Low Post.
Welcome to the first ever Low Post podcast recorded in Tim Bontemps' living room in Boston, Massachusetts, where Tim Bontemps is currently holding a PlayStation joystick, which is being used to control the television. Malika Andrews is sitting to my left on Tim Bontemps' couch. How are you?
I have my coffee. I'm great.
The young people can drink coffee at 7 p.m. and like actually fall asleep. I would not be able to. So we just saw Kawhi Leonard and the Drakettes survive to fight another day. The North is still alive. And now we've reached my favorite point of a playoff series where it's 2-2. It feels like the teams know each other. The terms are kind of established. And now we're going to have a nice, tough best of three with Toronto hosting two. Obviously, I don't know. Kawhi finished with 39 today. Is that right?
I believe so.
39, 14, 5, 7 turnovers you don't love. Philly had a chance to really take control of the series, and they did not do it. Toronto essentially down to six guys that Nick Nurse trusted today with Norman Powell not playing in the second half. Fred VanVleet is shook. He's shook.
Total disaster. I mean, if you'd said before this series that the Sixers bench would be significantly outplaying the Raptors bench, you would have made a lot of money if you could have bet on that. I mean, that was supposed to be a strength for Toronto, and they've been horrendous.
Got to give it up for Serge Ibaka, who was maligned by Kendrick Perkins, who has, for some reason, anointed himself as, well, I guess he can do whatever he wants.
Hey, Perk's been very good on TV.
NBA champion. Who criticized him, and I think Serge had not really had a very good playoffs, and stepped up with Pascal Siakam, Gimpy today. Tim Bontemps, if you're Philly, what do you take from this going into the next game? What did you see that's encouraging or discouraging? This is a strange game in that Embiid was sick, and what did he finish with?
Yeah, it was 11 points and 8 boards. 2 of 7. 2 for 7.
Somehow plus 17. We always seems to be plus. What do you take from this if you're Philly?
I mean, it's complicated, right? Because like you said, this is a game that Philly really had on its plate at home to go up 3-1, right? So losing that game, you look at it and go, man, like this was a chance we really had to take control of the series. On the other hand, Pascal Siakam playing with this bruised calf, right, was awful, looked terrible, couldn't move. You mentioned Fred VanVleet. I believe he hasn't made a shot in the series.
I think one. I think he has one.
Maybe one in the first game. He's been horrendous. Norm Powell's been horrendous.
McCaw got a nice little cameo today, and that was it. Got the big hook, came on the stage, and yanked him right off
immediately
the stage.
Out. Danny Green, oddly, only got 4 shots today. Kyle Lowry is much better, but still, like, you look at this game, and Kawhi Leonard's been unbelievable every single game, right? And generally, it's been one other guy on the team that's been good. You know, today, Mark was pretty good. Kyle was pretty good. Pascal was bad. But if I'm Philly, I think, hey, if it's basically Kawhi Leonard against us for three more games, despite the fact two of them are in Toronto, I feel like they should feel pretty confident they can get another game in Toronto at this point. Because the rest of the Raptors, I mean, this is supposed to be the deeper team. And so far, it's just been like Kawhi and, you know, a bunch of stand-ins, it feels like, for what the Raptors are supposed to be.
Yeah, this was a weird game that, like, the Raptors suddenly feeling so vulnerable without Kawhi doing everything is weird. And yet, as you said, Mark did enough today. Mark actually took some shots after looking totally
good. Mark and Kyle were both good today after being horrendous on Thursday.
I'm just going good. Everyone's going to go head over heels for these games. Like, all these dudes did was, like, play pretty well. Like,
right.
they weren't great.
But, I mean, you had more guys in double figures than you have thus far. And so it looks like, all right, so you're actually getting some help a little bit for Kawhi. But I kind of agree with you that with Kyle Lowry, people are going to be saying, because he was so bad, does this make that performance look even better this time around?
14,
because
7.
Because he was so bad previously.
14, 7, and 6 on 6 of 13. Like, give me more than that. How about give me 20?
Right.
Give me 20 and 8. Like, he still passed up shots. I thought there were still threes that he didn't take that he should have taken. Now, Jimmy Butler is huge, and I think the size of the Sixers is unnerving him a little bit. Mark Gasol had that 1-3 where even Mark Jones or Hubie Brown, I don't remember which one, like, were aghast that he just looked around. It was like, no one's within 20 feet of me. I guess I have to shoot.
Might as well go for it.
But then he started shooting, and they had that one play in the fourth quarter. I think Kawhi got a switch, had Mike Scott on him when they played Mike Scott at center, which I also thought was interesting. and he barbecued chicken Mike Scott and kicked it to Gasol. And I, as that's happening, I'm like, oh no, he's not going to shoot. He's not going to shoot. And it just went right up and right in. Kawhi just destroyed everybody the whole game.
It was impressive. I think that was the point where I was concerned my neighbors in my hotel room were going to come knock on the door, because I think I made such an animalistic noise when he hit that shot.
I tend to laugh very loudly, and that's when Kawhi made that three over two guys.
It was just one of those things where you had to laugh.
I just laughed.
Well, and then when the Sixers just went on a 6 minute stretch in the fourth quarter where they just could not hit a bucket. That was, I mean, I'm not sure they deserved to win that game, even when it looked like they had a chance there at the end. That spell really did it for me.
That run happened because Jimmy Butler was going crazy, and the Sixers, the Raptors had Kawhi Leonard on Ben Simmons a lot of the game, and then they said, go cover Jimmy Butler, and then the one source of offense for the Sixers went away.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because what's very interesting as the series has evolved is, so game three had the feel of the Sixers playing to the apex of what they can be. When all the puzzle pieces fit together.
Yep.
Like, Joel played really well. Yeah, Joel was the monster. Jimmy ran the offense. Simmons, I tweeted this. I think right now at this stage of Sixerdom, if with these guys together and they're all just trying to figure it out, I think Simmons has to become their Draymond Green, where he just...
He can't shoot anyway, so he has to, that's what they need him to do.
And people are, oh, that's not that... Well, he took 13 shots, I think, in game three, which is the third most in the starting five. Push the pace every time, and you saw it early tonight. Every time he got a defensive rebound, he's pushing the pace. That's my time. That's Ben Simmons' time. Defend everybody, and then just sort of find your way to be useful, screening for guys, random dribble handoffs. Today, it was more like Simmons just sort of sat in the dunker spot while Jimmy Butler ran pick and rolls. And he finished 5 of 10, only 2 free throw attempts, missed them both. And I just think it's going to be interesting. And so what you just said, Toronto made a decision midway through the game. We don't need to have Kawhi on Simmons anymore because he's not doing anything.
Nope.
Because he's sitting down in the dunker spot, not screening for anybody. He's not involved in any handoff action. So we're going to put Kawhi somewhere else that's more of a priority. And we're going to put Danny Green on Ben Simmons. Danny Green is still pretty good. You sacrifice some like rim protection on the back line doing that. But I thought it was the right move. And I think a very interesting challenge for Philly, and you don't have time in the playoffs for like big picture philosophical, like how are we going to integrate Ben? But I think keeping him active while this becomes a Jimmy Butler pick and roll team and a Tobias Harris pick and roll team. By the way, we should talk about the fact that Tobias Harris was 7 of 23 and 2 of 13 from 3. It's going to be very interesting to see how that evolves. And now Philly went from... Didn't it feel like Philly was going to win this game for most of the day? I felt like they were going to win.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, you look at the circumstances, right? This whole series has been Pascal Siakam and Kawhi Leonard against the Sixers, and Siakam was clearly not right. The other guys, like you said, Mark and Kyle were good. They weren't great. They were good. Serge gave him some nice production off the bench, but again, the bench was awful. Danny wasn't really involved. Through three quarters, the Raptors were 3 for 18 on uncontested threes. They got a million wide open threes. They missed them all.
Besides
Kawhi Leonard anyway. He was perfect.
And some of that is Siakam 0 for the corner, Ibaka 0 for life, Norm Powell 0 for life.
But that's the thing. They were getting open. All these guys were open. It wasn't they were just missing. I mean, they could have easily been up 10, 15 points through three quarters, but they were not.
But also, Joel Embiid was 2 for 7 and had the sniffles.
No, but I'm saying, to your point though, like it felt like they were going to lose this game most of the game because the Raptors had all these chances to get a lead, right? And they just failed to take advantage. So then you get to the fourth quarter, they're down, and it's like you're looking at it going, man, this was their chance to even up from game two, right? Both teams had a blowout win. Game two was a fluky game that Philly won late, and you kind of thought that they were going to get this one too and kind of ice the series. But then Kawhi Leonard, I mean, that three he hit with, I think, a minute 50 left was just an absolutely absurd shot over Joel Embiid on a closeout. It really wasn't until that shot went in that I was like, all right, I think they're going to win this game. But just Kawhi has been so good in these playoffs. And I think all the doubts about him during the year, is he quite the same player? Any of that stuff, I think they've been erased with the way he's played through these first 9 games. He's been absolutely unbelievable.
I mean, I think Tim summed that up pretty well. I absolutely agree. I think that it was interesting. We were having a conversation earlier today. Are the Raptors DOA? Is this it? Is this the end? And I think the overwhelming sentiment coming into this was yes. They just didn't look like, especially with Pascal coming in not at 100%, and the way he looked, especially in the first half, he kind of got a little bit warmer in the second, that it just didn't look like they were going to be able to do anything and to have an answer. But I mean, now it's back in the air as anybody series. So the question becomes, is the momentum going to shift? Is Toronto going to build on this, or is Philly going to be able to kind of whipsaw that back and be able to take control of it again? I still kind of think that Philly can, but it's becomes a much tougher road.
One other thing to note too, I thought in the second half, be curious what you thought, Zach. I thought Pascal looked very afraid to do much of anything after missing those four corner threes in the first quarter. He had several wide open looks from three above the break in the second half. The Sixers backed way off and Pascal dribbled around, didn't even look to shoot. I think that's something to watch going forward.
He also had that one time, I can't remember when it was, maybe late in the second quarter, when he tried to isolate Embiid one-on-one and just kind of like fell over.
Yes.
And then flung up a layup. But you got the sense that he doesn't have full control over like his limbs.
Yeah.
But they did, you know, they're going to run Siakam pick and roll when Embiid's on him. And they got like good looks out of it. Like Kyle had a couple mid-range jumpers. Those little mid-range jumpers from Kyle and then Mark had a couple of floaters. Like, they're just going to need some of those buckets to keep it going. They're not sexy. They're not on Nick Nurse's shot spectrum, as he refers to
right.
it. But they're going to need them.
And that little floater that Mark got out of the timeout early in the fourth quarter when they called a timeout early, ran a little pick and roll, I think, with Kyle and Mark, and got him in like an 8-footer, was a big shot too, to kind of in the same mode, like just to kind of keep them moving on offense.
And I think, you know, Siakam as ball handler, they got a dunk out of it when they had Kyle screen for him. Like, they're going to need, they can't let Embiid just sit there and do nothing. They're going to need to punish him for that. I also think it's fascinating that they can't do to Redick what the Nets did to him. They just can't find ways to punish Redick on defense. Like, they use Danny Green as a screener. It doesn't work. Embiid had that interception when Kawhi threw a really badly telegraphed pass to Danny Green on the roll on that, like when he flared to the corner. And Embiid saw it coming a mile away and Gasol was wide open. I don't know why.
Well, because the rest of the team isn't scoring. I mean, it's hard. They can put the worst guy on the court on them and they just know that it's not going to be an issue, which is the crazy part. Cause you looked at the Raptors, like, to me coming in the series, I was like, hey, the Raptors go 8 deep with good players. Like, they can kind of mix and match here and make things difficult for Philly. And it looked like that in game one, right? But ever since then, I mean, the Raptors just can't make any shots other than Kawhi and like one other guy in a game. And yeah, I mean, it's crazy that they failed to take advantage of that. Also, by the way, just as an aside, I can't get enough of watching JJ Redick play. Just every time he sprints to the corner and shoots a jumper, either from a three or from the baseline, when he's falling out of bounds and it goes in 80% of the time, I have no idea how he does that. I wouldn't even be able to jump up and like get the shot off.
He made a huge, spots. He made another huge shot.
He hit that three on the wing with a minute to go,
2:10 left. He cut like diagonally across the floor and Kyle tried to shoot the gap. And he flared down to the corner and made this. He just makes
every time he shoots the ball, he's moving. Like, in most guys, you want to like get set and shoot the ball. He's almost better when he's like falling over to the side. It's unbelievable.
People, you may have noticed Joel Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Damian Lillard all have deals with Hulu. That's because Hulu has live sports. You don't need cable anymore. You can watch all of your favorite teams play on Hulu. All season long, watch the biggest games live on Hulu Plus Live TV. That's Damian Lillard, Joel Embiid, everybody else. No cable required. Again, any sport you want, any game you want, any team you want, all season long on Hulu Plus Live TV. It's the same channels as cable for only $45. Why would you not do that? That actually seems like a pretty good deal. Check it out. Hulu Plus Live TV. No cable required. It's a good series. I mean, it was a good physical defensive game. It's the kind of game I thought we would see in this series, and now it just sort of shapes up. And I don't know, you know, it's Philly offensive rebounding is going to be a big thing for them. And Embiid hitting some free throws would help. He missed three big free throws in the fourth quarter. He's 7 of 10. I can't hate on him for that. What else? Wait, anything else?
Sixers I thought Jimmy Butler was awesome again for them. I mean, he's just, you know, there has been a lot of talk about Jimmy this year and even last year too on a lot of levels. He's been one of the more polarizing guys, I think, around the league. He's obviously going to be a free agent this summer, but, he's been a rock for them in this series and every game he's stepped up. I mean, he basically won them game two. He almost won them this game today. I mean, I think, you know, in game two, I want to say Ben, Joel and Tobias combined to score 23 points and they won that game. Today they combined to score, 37 points? Like, you would not expect them to be in games like that, but Jimmy has really just stepped up big for them.
And Tobias just had one of those games. He missed a lot of good shots. A lot of open shots, including that one right after the Kawhi shot.
Yep.
When they were up four and he left corner three when Serge left him to help. And he kind of needed to help, but he kind of didn't need to help that much.
And you mentioned earlier, Serge giving them the minutes they gave him today was massive. Like, I hadn't seen, they haven't played Mark and Serge together much at all.
Well, how about Mark, Pascal, and Serge to open the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
Season on the line, we're going to go super duper giant in a lineup that we have not used, like, at all.
Yep.
Ever.
And they survived the non-Kawhi minutes too. The other day in game three, I was at, I mean, the game basically ended. They were 15.
These people that are hating on Nurse, like, how Kawhi, gotta get Kawhi back in the game. If Kawhi could play 48 minutes, they would play. It's not like Nick Nurse is like, I think we, you know what? I think we can win some Kawhi minutes right now. Let's stretch it out. Let's see if we can get 6 minutes of rest for Kawhi. I want to try that out.
Right.
You just can't play him 48 minutes. You can't do it. Giannis isn't going to play 48 minutes. These guys aren't going to play 48. What did he finished 43 minutes.
Right.
That's probably about.
That's the max.
The max he can go.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, the other night in the competitive portion of the game, he sat for 4 minutes and 10 seconds and they got outscored 15-1. Today, I think they were even or plus two in the minutes he was on the bench. I mean, that was, you know, that was the difference in the game the other day, and it allowed them to have him in the game with a chance to win it, and he obviously did.
And clearly, he didn't play the bench at all, but even before today, he's not messing around with these, like, four bench guys very much anymore. Kyle is starting the second and fourth quarters, along with Siakam, usually.
Yeah, the other night, it was Kyle and Mark out there.
Yeah.
And they got
go small with Kawhi at the four. We haven't mentioned him. All of this underscores OG Anunoby is a huge loss in this series for them. It's just another guy who can switch across almost every position. It's just another body. Like, they just have
another potential option that could maybe do something.
Another basketball playing human.
Like, Fred VanVleet has struggled all year compared to what he was the last couple of years, but it is amazing how bad he has been in these playoffs. Like, the last couple of playoffs, he was one of the guys you looked at as like, hey, there's one of the Raptors I can rely on. If you're a Raptors fan or if you're, you know, the coaching staff, and it's been baffling to see just how bad he's been. I mean, he's been a complete non-factor.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of other subplots we can talk about here, but we have other series to talk about it. But I'm glad feels like we're having a moment right now, right?
Something where something could change, something could swing and more basketball could be played as opposed to.
Cause we're now close to Armageddon. We have arrived at Armageddon now for these teams that have the free agents. I mean, seriously, yeah. Like,
we're about going into these game threes, right? All four. It's very rare that every playoffs is usually a team that's got a lot on the line. But in this Eastern Conference, all four of these teams have just massive ramifications across the board for what their future looks like. I mean, Malik has been around the Bucks all year. You know, they're looking down the barrel at Giannis a year from now, trying to keep him. The Raptors have Kawhi. The Sixers have all these free agents. The Celtics obviously have Kawhi or Kyrie looming over them and the Anthony Davis pursuit maybe after that. I mean, it's just monumental challenges in front of all these teams, and how the next week goes could really impact all of them.
Yep. And we are all going to be at Celtics Bucks game four tomorrow, which we will talk about in a second. And if the Celtics lose that game, Kyrie Armageddon is underway. And had Toronto lost today, Kawhi Armageddon would have been underway.
Kawhi Armageddon.
Yeah. And, you know, he
that's
not
a good one, Liga.
Not
Kawhi Armageddon. That's good.
Never. Yeah.
Kyrie-pocalypse.
What was the best?
Kyrie-pocalypse.
Did you see Kyrie's comments today about
it didn't
the
even
team?
Make sense to me.
I love Kyrie. He said something like, Malika, what did he say?
He said something about how, I have to pull up the exact quote, but it's something about the earth and nothing makes sense in the earth or in life or in basketball or in life.
He
or,
was like, I believe we're all evolving. The question was, I had it here, and I think the question was something innocuous like, Don't you feel, Kyrie, like the team is learning about itself in the playoffs?
I just think we're all evolving. I don't think there's a limit you can put on the intellect of basketball or in life. That feels like a bumper sticker.
See, that doesn't even make sense.
But it feels like a bumper sticker.
Like, all of those words are English words.
Supposedly.
And you put them together in that order, and it sounds like a sentence, and then you read it again, and it's like, that's just gobbledygook. That's not anything.
When you read some like hefty dissertation paper and you're like, I think I know what I'm trying to understand here, but it's not quite making sense. But maybe he's just thinking that far ahead of the rest of us. I don't really know.
It's endlessly mockable. Like, what are every quote that you ask him these questions about, like the pick and roll, and he'll give you this quote that's like, What are we really doing on this planet, really, when you think about it? Do we know that we're all not in the simulation?
Kyrie, just
be normal.
My favorite recent Kyrie phrase is one he said again today, which is, I understand the object of the game is to score more points than the other team, which is something he said like five times in the last couple of weeks. It's like, yes, that is the object of the game.
Actually, have you seen Kyrie. The Uncle Drew movies?
I have not seen Uncle Drew.
Have you? Is it? No one. So we're not. I guess
not seen the Uncle Drew movies. I know the Bucks. One of the songs that they play in their introductions at home is from the Uncle Drew movie. But that's the most exposure that I have.
I'm impressed. I just wonder if he's like charismatic and entertaining as he must be. Otherwise, there would be no Uncle Drew. But in talking to him about basketball is like. I don't know.
But I don't think it's just basketball, because the earth is flat stuff. I mean, did that start as a basketball thing?
I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to. I can't care. I can't care about that. I'm going through my notes of game four, Raptors, Sixers, and to see if I have any other thoughts I want to get out. People, it's that time of year again, the playoffs, basketball's home stretch. This is where all the hard work pays off and we see who's tough enough to be crowned the champion of the NBA. It's where players are more driven than ever to go further, faster, and longer. And that's what drives Goodyear to make tires that do the very same thing. Goodyear knows that performance is everything, whether it's on the road or on the basketball court. So when it comes to choosing tires, let Goodyear.com help you choose what's best. Goodyear, more driven.
Is anybody else amused that Nikola Jokic does not jump center for the
This has been going on forever.
I know. It's just an amusing thing. I don't know how many fans actually know.
They won. They just won a tip. The game is on in the background as we're doing this. And when I was in Denver last year, I had Gary Harris on my podcast and I asked him, do you know what your record is on jump balls? And he was like, I think we've lost every one in this season. Because Paul Millsap jumps. And I'm excited. We're not going to talk about this series because the game is literally going on. I'm excited to watch this game, but I don't want to talk about it too much.
Maybe they're just trying to save him from getting more scratches on his arms from not doing jump balls. Did you see some of those pictures? It's amazing how scratched up Nikola Jokic gets during games. Like, I think in one of Ohm's stories, he was saying he leads the league in scratches. It's pretty remarkable. He looks like he just got in a fight with a bear.
Well, if you had given a list of 400 players before the season, or however many active NBA players are, said which of these guys will be able to play 65 minutes
Nikola Jokic would
in a
not
playoff game
crack the top
and survive, I don't think he would have been in the top 350. And yet,
there he was.
Okay, I'm done with Raptors, Sixers. I'm very excited for game five in Toronto, and I will be at game six in Philadelphia now that we are guaranteed.
We'll be there also.
We're guaranteed a game six now.
My cousin's graduating from Temple. It's Thursday afternoon. I'm going to go from there to the game.
I was confident there would be a game six. Even when I thought the Raptors were going to lose today, I was like, there's just no way that Philly's winning four straight. There's just no way. And so there we are, and you know, we'll see what happens. So let's talk about what we're going to see tomorrow. Malika, you've been around this team all year, Milwaukee.
Yes, sir.
You have developed a great rapport with their guys. I thought game three was a strange game for me to feel out, and I even went back and watched bits and pieces of it yesterday. I just came away kind of thinking I couldn't really pin, like, there's an overarching reason why Team A won and Team B lost. I thought both teams played pretty well, not great. Like, I thought the Celtics actually played pretty well. And the Bucks just were a little better. you were around them. We were both around them today at practice. What are you expecting for game four? What was impressive to you about game three? Anywhere you want to go?
Well, I mean, I think games one and two, because they were both blowouts, it was really hard to get a pulse on the series. And then in game three, you had something that was a little bit closer. There was a little bit more, scratch and claw to try to pull it out. And so, my gut is that, okay, maybe this builds momentum for Milwaukee. Maybe this is a game where they can build off of. This is a win that they're going to want to look at. One where, you know, Eric Bledsoe really wasn't playing his best, especially offensive basketball. So I think that this could be a building block game for them. I expect the games to be close from here on out. There's not going to be another, I don't expect them to be another one of those big swings, but I think similarly to, the way Philly was feeling, Milwaukee sees a window and they want to shut it. They want to be like, this is it. This is the door. We're slamming it shut. But I thought that was going to happen with Philadelphia today. And obviously it didn't. It is, Boston is a challenging place to win. And so they should be happy that they were able to pick up the one. But to your point of both teams playing well, I think the difference was, and I, going into the game, I never would have thought this in a million years, but George Hill and Pat Connaughton having those big games. I was told, you know, before the series, I had a conversation with Giannis, I had a conversation with Bled, and they both said, I really do think that this could come down to our benches. I think that we both have really good benches. We both have depth, and our depth has just been a little bit more consistent. If they can be consistent in this series, we should be able to win. And, you know, George Hill had that monster game. Pat Connaughton had that monster game. And that really made a difference for them in a game where not all five of their starters were excellent.
I'll tell you what drew some notice among people in this series and around the league. On the same night, Rodney Hood comes in to win the game, the quadruple overtime game for Portland.
The former Cavaliers coming in hot.
George Hill scores 21 points. Rodney Hood was reduced to a puddle of nothingness in Cleveland. And George Hill has played two seasons like he was in a coma. And I'm just saying, it is not easy to be Bron's teammate. If you're a spot up guy and you don't make shots right away, or you don't have a lot of time to adjust to playing with him. And it just, there were a lot of eyes opened around the league that on the same night, it's like, oh, George Hill dunked.
Yeah.
Well, how about that?
That's what I think the feeling was in the building too. There was a lot of the what? That's happening? He's going for it? Oh, he's going for it.
You know who he dusted one-on-one when he dunked? Kyrie.
Yeah. And that was what I think the story of the game was, which was that you had, going into that game, you had, to me, all eyes were on both stars, right? This was one of the biggest spots yet in Giannis's career. Guy who's just kind of evolving into the superstar we've been looking at the last couple of years. And you had Kyrie, who was, you know, brought to Boston for just these kind of moments, right? Game three at home, chances to go up in the series. And in the second half of that game, you saw Giannis go to the basket over and over and over again and get to the line and change the game, get the Celtics in the bonus and shift the game back in Milwaukee's favor. And you had Kyrie, you know, dribbling around in hero ball, kind of getting frustrated with teammates, you know, taking bad shots, and the Celtics kind of devolved into what they've been when they've been bad this year. And I thought that dichotomy really spelled out the way the game went and was why Milwaukee's now up in the series.
I thought it was in the bottom 10 percentile of games Kyrie has played on defense this year. I thought it was one of the worst defensive games I've seen him play. He got killed on screens. He got back cut. He allowed easy offensive rebounds a couple of times. He miscommunicated and let guys walk into easy threes. It was like bad Kyrie on defense. And this season, to his credit,
he's been much better.
He's hit about what you would hope, which is like he's not hurting you. He's like, he's actually kind of big and physically stronger than you think he is. He's been like an...
He's kind of got to where Steph has been after early in his career. Like, not... Like you said, he's not a negative. He's at least like holding his own a lot of the time.
Milwaukee hasn't really gone after him all that much in this series. Not nearly as much as I thought they would. I still think they should do it. I think they should do it more.
Part of that too is because, and I'm curious what Malika's thought. I mean, Eric Bledsoe is just not. I mean, he's had two awful games, and you know, played well in game two. But to me, that was a big thing yesterday. Or Friday, I guess, was that, I mean, you mentioned George Hill, right? George Hill and Pat Connaughton played great off the bench, that makes up for the fact that Eric Bledsoe was again terrible in Boston. And that's the thing coming into the series I was concerned about from Milwaukee's side was, can Eric Bledsoe give them enough good performances? Malik wrote a great feature about him the other day. Can he play well enough to kind of be that third guy with Middleton and with Giannis? And so far he hasn't been, but they're still up 2-1 in the series, which I think is a credit to them.
And Bled is an interesting guy, and I want you to talk about him because you have gotten to know him very well. I thought at least his bad performance in Game 3, there were like errors of commission and not omission. Like, he was doing stuff, and it was a little bit frenzied and a little bit frazzled, but at least he didn't come into Boston and go into like, I'm just going to kind of hang around the game and be like Kyle Lowry, bad Kyle Lowry mode. I'm going to try and do stuff. And it was a little, like, cause you need him to play, particularly now that they have shooting all over the floor, you need him to play with juice. Like, you need him to be like, I'm in semi-transition and I'm just going to cross up this guy in front of me and get a layup. You need that kind of Eric Bledsoe in this system. So I'm very curious if he got some of the frazzliness. Frazzliness out of his system and is going to come find that balance in his game. But what did you get to talk to him after the game? Because you've gotten to know him well. I was very impressed that he opened up too in that feature and said, you know, yeah, I was really nervous. Like, I had butterflies on my stomach. I was anxious. You don't see guys cop to that much.
Well, Eric is he's a nervous guy. I mean, I wrote about this in the feature, but he said, you know, since seventh grade, he's gotten these butterflies and these nerves, and he's never really figured out how to completely make them go away. He just runs up and down a court a couple of times, and then after a while, he hopes that they kind of subside. He's tried yoga, he's tried breathing, he's tried all of this stuff, and frazzled is a good word because he was like trash talking guys during game three, but not really doing anything. Or he would, you know, make a really energetic defensive
play. We should make
a
name for that. Who would be the name for like trash talking, but not actually contributing? We need to think of like who that would be in the NBA. I'm going to come back. I'm going to now rack my brain. But
make a note of that because that's what it seemed like to me. There were just some funny moments in the game where it was like, he's strangely confident for being the only guy who finished with a negative plus minus on the entire roster during game three. And the thing is, I was expecting after the game, Eric to have retreated into his shell and just kind of brush off questions, because that's what he does after he plays poorly. He doesn't want to talk about things. After game one, he left without talking to anybody.
By the way, understandable. I wouldn't really be psyched to do it either.
I mean, yeah, that's completely. But I mean, just to contrast game one, where he played horribly, and game three, where he did not play very well. Game one, he left the arena without talking to anybody. He was kind of sulking and just sort of walked out, kind of ignoring the crowds. And then after game three, he was holding court in the locker room. He was joking with people and chatting and answering questions for the media and saying that, you know, I really don't think I was that bad. It was a very interesting dichotomy that he had going on there. And I think that part of it comes from the fact that we talk a lot about the Bucks offense and the Bucks offensive system and their shooters and the four guys they put around Giannis. But Bud, if you ask him, he'll say he's more proud of the Bucks defensively than offensively, and they get a lot of their defensive juice from Bled. And so what he's looking at in those games where he's not maybe scoring the way that he wants to be, he's going to say, okay, but I did this and that better, and that makes me feel like I can go to sleep tonight.
And that was a high scoring game, I think. I think it was 123, 114, something like that at the end of the game. It was like high scoring. Yeah. And again, I thought Milwaukee's defense was pretty good. And since game one, they've been switching more. They even switched Lopez onto Kyrie a few times,
which is rare. I mean, during the regular season, switching really, that's not something they did a whole lot.
They were the second least switchy team in the whole league.
And behind, that's a big adjustment that Bud made.
Behind Orlando, who Steve Clifford views switching as heresy. Yeah. It's you can't do it. But I don't think switching Lopez onto Kyrie was necessarily part of the plan, but it fit within the general framework of what they're doing. And they clearly decided when that happens, we're going to send a lot of help. Like, right, we want Kyrie to see a lot of bodies, and we want him to pass to Baines, to pass to Rozier, to pass to Ojale. They're going to keep daring Marcus Morris. Now, dare is a strong word, because the Bucks, I think one of the reasons they won that game is they got in and they got out on the flight of the ball really fast, and got, like, you watched some of Jaylen Brown's threes in that game. Like swing, swing, swing. The Bucks are in rotation. It gets to Jaylen Brown, and you feel like, oh, this is the natural endpoint of this possession. And Jaylen Brown goes up to shoot, and it's like, it's going to be a good three. By the time the ball is out of his hand, there's somebody right in his face. Like, the Bucks did a really good job. It'd be interesting to see if they can keep – I mean, I think they will be able to keep that up. And Boston, yeah.
No, I was going to say, in game one, the difference in that game was that the Bucks are even more usual, I think, passive in terms of letting Boston get to their spots. And, like, they were giving up wide-open looks to Gordon Hayward, Al Horford, even Kyrie in that mid-range area where they're happy to give up shots. And, like they said, after it was an energy and effort thing. But, you know, the reason the Celtics are very comfortable – and they, in the last two games, they have not been comfortable. Like, they're not getting comfortable looks anymore. And even though they're getting threes and they're kind of getting some of the shots they want, the Bucks have really amped the defense up, and that has gotten them out of rhythm. And, you know, then Kyrie, game two is maybe the worst game I've seen Kyrie play in the playoffs. And
what did he shoot? He shot okay, didn't he?
In game two, he shot,
game two. I thought you meant game three.
And last night he shot 8 for 22. He got to the line a bunch, but again, like, he didn't have the kind of Kyrie game you would expect. And, you know, if Boston wants to even the series up, they're going to need him to be much better. And this is a team, though Kyrie's not a huge guy, with all the length the Bucks have, I think it has, you know, given him some trouble a little bit in the series.
The Kyrie dynamic is so interesting because I think he's actually gotten a little too much criticism this year for being a ball hog and isolating and taking, like, there's this idea that the Celtics have this offense that they want to run, where it's drive and kick and drive and kick, and Kyrie is like aborting that offense by being a little bit of a hog. I actually don't mind most of the shots he takes. The only ones I mind, long twos with 10 or more left on the shot clock. When he does that, you can see the rest of the team that's not like a three, fine. Like, rim attack, fine. The long to a snaking long two with 14 on the shot clock, you can kind of see everybody's shoulders.
Yeah.
So unless it goes in, and when it goes in, they all go crazy because there's nothing like a Kyrie. There are a few things like a Kyrie hot streak.
Well, to your point, the issues with Kyrie this year have very rarely been on the court. I mean, I think this has been the best he's played from start to finish in a season of his career at both ends. I mean, I think he's been really good. But, you know, it's obviously been an interesting year on a lot of levels here in Boston.
Yeah. And Giannis looked like a guy who's starting to get a little more comfortable with Al Horford on him. He had a couple of nice, like, spinning finger rolls where he just went right at Al. And the Bucks, I know the Bucks have worked hard at, when we're bringing the ball up in transition, instead of just coming right down the middle at Al, if you watch, like, he'll come from the side, and sometimes he won't have the ball. He'll come from the side and he'll catch a pass at like half court, and he's found little ways to get in there where they can't load to him. And the Bucks were also much, much better about those corner shooters were like outrunning Giannis in transition. And like, you can't build a wall if those two dudes are behind the wall before you even build it. Then there are easy passes to him. So it just feels like they found some stuff, but Boston's really good. I mean, they make Milwaukee earn it. It's a good matchup.
No, I mean, this was kind of why it was such an intriguing series to come into it in the first place, right? Because the way the Bucks play kind of is in the inverse to the way the Celtics play, and kind of the matchups on each end kind of, you know, it is more going to be which team's style of play would kind of win out, right? And through the last two games, you know, Milwaukee has really been able to take control of that, and, you know, it really sets up what should be a fascinating game tomorrow, because, you know, it seems like there's a decent chance Marcus Smart will play. Celtics will get a boost from that. Malcolm Brogdon has been ruled out for game four. And I think I don't know if we all agree, it's just a bit of a surprise. I think a lot of people thought Malcolm was going to play Friday. Now he's not playing again tomorrow. You know, it's going to be a really fun game to kind of see how that shakes out.
Yeah. I don't know if you have any insight you can share. What's going on with Brogdon?
If Bud's handling of injury has been, in the past this season, has been any indication, it is the slowest and the steadiest is how he is overly cautious. I mean, he held Tony Snell could have played. Bud doesn't like to play if this was the playoffs, could he have? Or if this was the finals, could he have? He doesn't like to play that game. But all indications were when Tony Snell was out, he sat out an extra 2 weeks than he actually had to. And obviously this is different. This is the playoffs. Every game counts just that much more. But I mean, Malcolm is playing 5-on-5. Malcolm is, you know, he's healthy. He's back into a rhythm. And I think that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised Bud wanting him to come back in Pfizer Forum. I wouldn't be surprised if they want to see if they can close out one more on the road without him. I think they're also, you know, the goal is always to steal one on the road. And so I think they're a little bit happy with that right now.
Giannis said that to me. I got to talk to Giannis for like 3 minutes today, just the two of us. And he said something about, yeah, we came here and we did our job. Yeah. You know, our job is to get one. And I was like, I said to him, I was like, you don't strike me as someone who's like, it's cool, we did our job to get one. Like, that's your whole thing is like, you're like an ass kicker. You're here to win everything.
And destroy.
And,
yeah.
And then he sort of gave a different answer than that. But yeah. It surprised me to even hear those words come out of his mouth.
But I think that was him being honest. I think that, you know, he did realize after that, yeah, of course. Now the extra one, this becomes a bonus. You know, winning two becomes a bonus. Winning one is that's what we need to do on the road. And so I do think there is a little bit of that mentality. But, you know, the series is going to at least five. I think Malcolm's coming back for five.
To that point about Giannis, he also got criticized, I thought, very stupidly before game two for saying, I don't know if we're going to win, but we're going to play a lot harder. And people are like, well, what are you doing not guaranteeing a win in game two? I think sometimes
you can't guarantee a win in game two.
No,
I
understand that. I thought it was very stupid. I think sometimes Giannis just says things very literally. And that was like, we literally wanted to come here and get a win out of two, and we got a win, as opposed to like, I don't care if we lose game four. That's all.
I actually think it was how the Bucks responded to game one was a very positive sign for their culture.
Huge.
So they destroy the Pistons, and I do think, and I know they think, and I know the Celtics think, that there was a little bit of like knuckleballer to fastballer effect going from a series that was not competitive for 1 second, really. The swaggery, tough Celtics. And then you get waxed at home in game one. And I think what Giannis was saying when he said that was, hey, look, we're just going to control what we can control. And we didn't play hard enough or smart enough in game one. I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe they shoot 60% from three, but we are going to be the team that we know we are in game two. I thought that was like healthy.
That's how they are. And that's how, the Bucks have been all season. I mean, there's a reason they only lost back-to-back games once all year in the regular season. So, you know, I asked Bud at one point earlier this year, I said, do you think when it comes to the playoffs where, you know, everyone has a certain level of talent, and obviously talent is the biggest indicator of who wins. But if you go up against a team, if you're playing a team like the Celtics that have had, at least from, you know, the things coming out of that locker room, if they've had their fair amount of turbulence this year, is the fact that you guys like each other, the fact that there's a pretty no-nonsense from the top down sort of culture mandate, does that become an X factor in this sort of series? And he said, absolutely. And so that's kind of what you're seeing come back into effect. I mean, today, you know, they were practicing, and Giannis comes over to Eric and says, oh, I'm going to go lift. Are you coming with me, right? Where we're going to do upper body. And that's kind of the culture that they have going on here. So it's interesting to, in addition to the opposite on-court strategies, the different ways in which these locker rooms have built a culture, it's interesting to see that play out over the course of this series as well.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to pick Boston to win this series. Tim laughed at me because he thought I was going to, and he knows how close I came to going totally out on Boston in late March. I just think
like everyone else in the NBA has been back and forth on the Celtics 1,000 times.
Oh, in late March, I was ready to declare I'm almost all the way out.
No, we had a conversation in Brooklyn about it for about 15 minutes.
I was really grappling with a major decision. And I said on one previous podcast, I like rode my boat all the way to the end of the Rubicon and I could not get out. I just couldn't bring, I started paddling back the other way and I never got there. And then I almost picked him to win this series. And there were two reasons I didn't. Giannis, and I just can't trust the Celtics to win four games against a great team. I'm burned and I'm scarred by everything that happened this year. And so it's gut check time now. Right. It's gut check. And the Bucks are happy and they're content and they like each other and their chemistry is awesome and they have the best guy. And I don't care what he says. He is coming out tomorrow and he wants to kick their ass and end this series.
Yep.
And he looks comfortable. They figured out, you know what they did in the second half of, game three, they ran a lot of Giannis Lopez pick and rolls. They ran eight. You know how many they had run in the playoffs before then? won the whole playoffs.
Yep.
And you could tell it confused Boston, and they had Hayward on Lopez because they don't, that's how they're matching up. They're putting Horford on Giannis, and Lopez's big giant screens, and he sticks his arms out, and they're illegal and all that. Like, they couldn't figure it out, and they got some easy buckets. They got an and one out of it, and anytime Giannis is in a pick and roll, with Horford on him, I think it's even more essential that they put him in a two-man game and just get, anytime you can get Horford off of him, there's just no one else that can do anything with him. They're just, everyone else is totally destroyed.
No, and that's the thing, right? Like, all year long, everybody has been saying, look, the Celtics have all this talent. They're going to figure it out, right? And everybody all year long around the league has been saying, well, the Bucks have had this really nice regular season, but is it going to translate to the playoffs? The role player is going to play well. Is Giannis going to adapt to the playoffs, right? And it's kind of been like these two opposite ends of the spectrum the whole time, right? Coming together and like, how is it going to shake out? And so far in this series, I picked Giannis to win MVP this year. I think he is the best player.
You were adamant.
I was adamant about it. And it's not a knock on James Harden, who's had an unbelievable season. But
by the way, and we'll talk in a second, showed up huge
big
last
time,
night.
Big time last night. But, you know, I was fascinated, you know, going to that presser on whatever day it was, the day before game two, seeing Giannis as calm and composed as he was. It reminded me of how he was in Philly last month when they played the Sixers. Late in the regular season, and they were down the whole game. Eric Bledsoe got ejected early. Chris Middleton, I think, was either hurt or played like his on a minutes restriction. And Giannis was just icy calm the whole time. And then the end of the game, he took over, won the game. And I just think he's been such a rock for them all year, frankly, in a way that Kyrie has not been for the Celtics, that over these last two games, you've seen that. Like, he has taken control of the series. And look, I'm really curious to see what happens tomorrow, because you're right. I don't buy this thing from Giannis. Like, I don't think he's going to be satisfied, and I would not be surprised if he has another massive game. And the Celtics are going to have to do a lot to overcome him in this series.
And also,
he's just such an unstoppable force.
The whole league needs to stop whining about the referees immediately. Every team that loses whines about the referees.
Yep.
So Kyrie's just ridiculous how many free throws Giannis had. You know what? You fouled him every time. He's a 7 foot tall sprinter.
And a lot of them were just dumb fouls. Like Jason Tatum, he's guarding Jason Tatum's guarding him. He comes down and he just whacks him on the arm. It's like, you can guard him without fouling, but if you're going to reach over and do this, you got no chance.
And this is why I'm starting to rethink my position that full transparency on the officiating is what they should do. Because I can already feel it. What the Rockets did, trying to bring attention to the foul discrepancy in the full 48-minute report, which we don't get to see. Other teams are starting to do that.
Yeah, weaponizing that.
It hasn't gotten out yet, but there are other teams. There are people with other teams who have said to me in the last 3 days, Zach, so I don't want you to put this out there, but the report showed 7 uncalled fouls on so-and-so and only 2 uncalled fouls on our guy. And I'm like, I can see this being a thing now after every game in the playoffs where, according to sources who have viewed the report, and every game is just going to be this mathematical equation of, okay, so this team won by 4, but what if all these calls? It's like, I'm worried that that's how it's going to be. And I don't know what to do. But I've been totally pro-transparency. The refs are really good. Let's show everyone how good the refs are. Let's be open and clean about it. And now I'm worried that it would go the other way, where after every game, it's going to become a story.
Right. And I mean, it's a human job with some human error that goes to it a little bit too. So I agree with you on that. And I asked Giannis today, I said, how much of you going to the line as much as you did in game 3 is something you're looking for versus just a byproduct of your natural game and aggressiveness. And he said, I mean, now that he's figured out that he can just go at Horford again and again and again and go at some of these guys and get to the line, that's absolutely something he's going to do. But it's not necessarily that he's just looking to get to the free throw line, because he's not a great free throw shooter. It's just something that kind of happens as he's kind of barreling his way towards the basket. And then they don't hold their ground. They hack his arm. Something like that happens.
How many dunks has he had this series? I should have looked this up. I'm not on Wi-Fi right now, but I feel like we haven't seen a rude Giannis dunk in this. We've seen
rude Jaylen Brown dunks,
but like, I mean the rude ones where he's just under the rim and he and goes up like a superhero, like having, like throwing people off of him and just dunks.
Or the one he had earlier this year where it was almost from the free throw line.
Well, Thon Maker should have to retire some of the dunks that happened to him in the first round. That should be it for poor Thon. My funny Giannis story. So speaking of him drawing fouls, so I circled this possession from game three and I was very excited to ask Giannis about it today because I thought for sure I was right. They're down 46-34, down by 12, second quarter. Middleton, Giannis pick and roll. Giannis screens for Middleton. And I just said, I love every time they put him in a pick and roll. Good things happen. Horford drops back. Middleton threads him a nice pocket pass. Giannis has a lane all the way to the hoop. But whoever is guarding Mirotić in the weak side corner, I don't remember who it is in the lane, like, right away. There is not anyone within 25 feet of Mirotić. He's the most open he has ever been. And Giannis doesn't pass him the ball. And Giannis goes up, and he gets fouled. So I'm watching that, and I think, wow, what a mature play. Because the game's slipping away a little bit. It's like danger zone time. And Giannis made this calculation in his head, like, you know what? Instead of another three, like, I know Bud wants to bomb away, like, maybe we're just on one of those cold streaks. Let me stop the game, get us some sure points, stop the run, give us a chance to breathe a little bit, go 2 for 2. Like, that's what Michael Jordan would have done. Michael Jordan would have said, we just need to stop the game and get me to the line and get 2 points. So, like, that's an MVP kind of play. I asked him about it.
And he wouldn't take.
No, he just said, I didn't see any. Said, if I saw him, I would have passed him the ball. He's a great shooter. It's like, God damn, Giannis, can you please just make the anecdote work? And he's like, I'm sorry. He was like, so nice. He's like, I'm very sorry. I have to be honest with you. And I'm like, all right.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right.
Tim, any Celtics things you're looking for? Adjustments? Anything?
I mean, I'll be curious to see what happens with Marcus Smart. If he plays, how much he plays, if he starts, how Brad uses him. I mean, it seems like he's going to play. I think he's going to play in kind of 4 or 5 minute bursts. I think that's going to give the Celtics a real lift. Marcus, I think he was arguably the best defensive guard in the league this year. I think he will help them a lot. He's also, I think he's their emotional leader. So getting him back, I think will be just a boost from that standpoint. And look, I mean, I think this is also put up or shut up time for Kyrie. He was terrible in game two. He was not very good in game three. He said after game two, you know, this is why the Celtics traded for me, right? For games like this, for situations like this. Like, he's got to be good, right? He's got to be good in game four. If they're going to win 3 out of 4 games in the series in advance, they need Kyrie Irving to be the kind of playoff, you know, star level player he's been throughout his career. And, you know, it's time for him to step up and do that. So, out of everybody on the court tomorrow, I'm very, very fascinated to see what Kyrie looks like because, you know, I wouldn't guess he'd have 2 bad games in a row. And, you know, I'm really going to be curious to see how he bounces back. And because, again, he was in a great mood today.
I love how the Celtics beat reporters like Kyrie's in a great mind space today. Kyrie was nice to everyone today?
No, he just was happy. I mean, because there's been a lot of stretches this season when Kyrie has not been happy. And it's gone back and forth. And generally, when Kyrie is happy, the Celtics are very good.
It's starting to sound like Dwight Howard. Like, that's what we used to say about Dwight Howard. Like, Dwight, they gave Dwight his favorite candies and he was happy. Like, it's like, I don't need a Kyrie mood, like, daily mood update.
Well, that's part of why the Celtics have been all over the place this year. I think, your point about Giannis before, even though the anecdote didn't work. But having a guy who's that rock solid, like, there's a reason the Bucks won 60 games. I mean, it's for all the other stuff, for Mike Budenholzer's system, for all these other adjustments, it's because Giannis shows up every game. And he's there every game at both ends of the court. That's why I thought he was the MVP. Because he grabbed that team by the scruff of the neck and dragged it along, right? And the Celtics haven't had that all the time. And, you know, you saw in game three, they reverted to bad habits. Why? Because they built up bad habits over 82 games. The Bucks have not. And, you know, there's a reason why the Bucks won 60 games and the Celtics won 49 or 48 or whatever. Celtics have a lot of talent, but it hasn't always shown up. So we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Yeah. And then there are a couple little things. Like Boston's losing the turnover battle in this series, which I don't think is tenable for them. The Bucks don't force turnovers. Boston can't lose it. Yeah. I lose that battle.
That also lets the Bucks get out in transition if they get any live ball, which is a disaster.
I don't know what utility Baynes has. If you conclude that he can't guard Giannis, then I just don't know that he should play.
Well, the problem is
play Ogilvy at center.
Well, they tried Ogilvy last game. I mean,
I think
I think Baynes might play tomorrow. Baynes has sprained his ankle like four. Whenever they've had Baynes on the court this year, they've been very good. Part of the issue in this series is I don't think they want to play Baynes and Horford together much because they like having one of them on the court.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure Baynes has any utility.
Yeah, he might not. My guess is they're going to try him for a longer stretch tomorrow. I asked Brad about it after game three. He kind of indicated he might try him more. He played 2 minutes, I think, in game three. He sprained his ankle, I think, 3 times in the last 3 weeks, and he just isn't moving well. But he's such a big body that I think they might have to just try to live with some of these guys getting shots to try to wall off the paint more and try to keep Giannis away from the basket. Because if Giannis is getting to the rim, you saw the last two games. That's not a winning formula either for Boston.
People, this show is sponsored, as it often is, by SeatGeek. The ticket industry hasn't changed that much in a long time. There's a bunch of big companies who have been around forever, but they don't really care about making the experience easier for you, the customer. SeatGeek is there to change all that. It has 50,000, actually more than 50,000 five-star reviews in the App Store, and it's focused on making your experience easy. It pulls in millions of tickets from all over the web. It's one-stop shopping. You don't have to click around to a million sites out of fear that you've missed a really good deal. It rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10. It has an interactive seat map. It has green dots for good deals, red dots for less good deals. It's very simple. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It is by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. Whenever I have a friend from out of town, I need to buy him a ticket to a game. I go there. They've helped me with Broadway shows, comedy shows, you name it. Everything, they have it. Best of all, my listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do, download the SeatGeek app. Enter promo code LOWE, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. Bam, $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Remember, that's promo code LOWE, L-O-W-E, for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
Speaking of ankle sprains, let's do 10 minutes on the game we all got together and watched last night. Golden State-Houston, when Houston gutted out an overtime win. Here are Kevin Durant's playoff numbers. 36 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, 1 block, 1 steal per game. That was 36 points. On 52% shooting, 44% from three, 90% from the floor. Almost single-handedly, with help from my boy Andre Iguodala, won that. And a triple-double from Draymond Green, too. Almost won that game last night. Houston has been competitive in this series. It's not pretty. It's not fun to watch. The pace of this series is 95 possessions per game, which is slower than any team played this year, which indicates to me that Houston has done its job and slow this series down and uglied it up. Part of the way they did that in game three was hitting the offensive glass really hard. They're up to 30% offensive rebounding rate for the series, which is really, really good. The death lineup, if it has one weakness, that's what it is. It's plus only a little bit for the playoffs. It's 118 points scored, 112 allowed in 120 minutes. It's Golden State's most played lineup. Their bench all of a sudden looks rickety. Like Kevon Looney might be their best bench player now that Iguodala is starting. Livingston is just giving them nothing. It's been an underrated little story for them this season. Livingston is just giving them nothing. It might be about done for him. And Steph, I just don't think he should ever try to dunk again. Just don't dunk ever.
I didn't think he was going to. I thought he was just going to go for the layup. I really did. As he was streaking down the court, I was like, all right, I'll just lay it in. It'll be nice and easy. And he met the bottom of the rim. It wasn't even like he got up quite enough to get it. That's got to be a low point for him.
Well, I think you were in LA at the Lakers game. I was there too.
Yeah.
When Steph tried to dunk and
nearly got hurt
and slipped on his way. I mean, you could tell he was trying to dunk because he was trying to get all his momentum and he slipped. And I've never quite heard this noise from a crowd of like laughter. Like in unison, loud laughter, and also like mixed with a scream of terror, like maybe this isn't funny and this is going to be the end of Steph Curry's season happening right here. Just don't ever dunk.
Yeah, Steph's greatest strength is the freedom with which he plays at all times. And one of his greatest flaws is the freedom with which he plays all the time. This is why he threw a insane behind the back pass, in game seven in 2016, one of the worst plays I've ever seen. This is why, in the last minute of overtime last night, he kind of casually goes to the rim and whiffs on a wide open layup and then casually goes to the rim and tries to dunk the ball down five with 25 seconds left and sprites it off the rim. I mean, that's the yin and yang of Steph. And it's most of the time it's amazing for the Warriors, but sometimes it bites them. And last night it bit them.
He was 5 of 14 on twos last night, 7 of 23 overall. I think that sounds like too many twos, but that's what I have in my notes.
Also, oddly, I thought the Warriors really tried to attack with him, I thought, a few too many times in that overtime. And like when Durant was cooking, they kind of went away from him. And also, the last minute of that, I know I'm jumping around, but we're all here watching that game last night. The last minute of that game was completely insane on both ends. Just
Warriors
horrendous decision
failing
making.
To get a 2-for-1.
Yeah, the Warriors not getting a 2-for-1. Nobody calling timeout. The Rockets coming down, just having Chris Paul dribble around for 20 seconds and not doing anything. I mean, it was the whole thing was very baffling.
Yeah, you want to have these hard and fast rules of like, we've now all decided that not calling timeout is the smart thing.
Right.
That's the analytically smart thing. But they had enough time to realize.
Yeah,
okay,
38
this is,
seconds.
This is no the Rockets. Even oh, had Rockets, enough. They, yeah. Rockets had like 19 seconds when they got the ball back. They had enough time to be like, "Oh, this is going poorly. Let me
right,
like
call timeout and get James
Chris
Harden the ball."
Chris is in jail, and James Harden is standing there doing nothing on the other side of the floor. Let's stop this. And instead, they didn't. Like there's a time where you can call timeout. I'm the Warriors. Apparently, from the people who were there, did not seem worried. Nor, I guess they should never be worried about anything.
I can confirm that from talking to people today.
Yeah,
they are not worried.
But they're never worried. Every time there are a couple of coaches on their staff who are always worried because coaches are wired to be always.
One coach in particular.
No, there are a few that are always worried because coaches are wired to be worried. And then everyone else on the team is like,
it's fine. On to the next.
They're always like that.
Like the California cool surfer dudes. That's,
I guess.
That's their MO.
They were not worried down at halftime in the second half of both Game 6 and Game 7 last year in the West Finals. Is they never woke up all playoffs and won the title,
and
which is still
as
amazing.
Bad as Curry was last night, and he was bad. It was a bad Steph game. They lost the game in part early in the second quarter when he was on the bench, and they got rolled. And as soon as he came back in, things were good again. And I think there was some burbling discussion on Twitter today, and I didn't see a lot of it, about when are we going to start talking about how Steph is not as good in the playoffs.
And you want to look up Steph's numbers in the playoffs?
His numbers are fantastic.
I'm going to look them up while you're talking, just so people see him.
No, his numbers are really good.
I know. I'm going to read them off to people after I look
them
up.
And then there was this other debate about, does he have an iconic postseason game? And I think he had sort of an iconic volume of work. There are a few games, Game 7 against the Thunder, comes to mind as one of them. The game where he crossed up Dellavedova in the first finals in overtime. And
to me, it's that Blazers game when he came back from injury.
The I'm back game. His stats in the playoffs are good. He has more shooting games than you would think given his pedigree. But there is still just something about him being on the court that makes them different. And there's just still something about the staggered screen pick and roll where three guys go with him and it opens up everything else and he gets no statistical credit for that other than plus minus. And that just happens a lot. There's a lot of stuff that he does that doesn't result in him getting any direct statistics, but it's because he's on the floor. But he has had a strange – I think it's an interesting discussion. It's worth having. He's had a strange amount of shooting games, but his overall shooting numbers are outrageously good for the playoffs.
Yeah, his numbers in the playoffs, 25.8 points per game, 6.3 assists per game, 5.3 rebounds per game, shooting 45% from the field, 40.7% from three, and 89.8% from the free throw line. So that's pretty good.
They're pretty good. They're probably a little worse than his regular season numbers,
probably
which I think is the standard that people are using because they look at, let's say, today, Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard's numbers are better in the playoffs than they are in the regular season. And I think that's the standard by which Steph is being measured. Not Kawhi specifically, but where is your game? Is it 110% of your regular season performance or is it 90? And I think it's fair that sometimes it's 90 for Steph, but he's doing stuff that is just not showing up in traditional stats all the time. And I still think, I've said it many times, I still think he should have been 2015 Finals MVP.
Well, that was absurd.
Well, everyone voted for Andre.
I know.
Everyone voted for Andre except for the four of us who voted for Bron. Andre had an unbelievable series.
He was great.
The shots he hit on offense were because of Steph Curry. Two passes away. Two or three passes away. All of them. Not some of them. All of them were because of Steph Curry. So, but undeniably, last night was very bad. He missed a lot of shots at the rim. They decided to just lay down and die with 20 seconds left in the game when they could have fouled. And this series has not been a party for them. Game one was very close. Game two was not, that was a little bit close, but I think comfortably a Golden State win. And game three, they lost. We had fun watching that game. That was a good game.
We had a lot of fun watching that game.
I had fun with people making fun of my love for Andre Iguodala as he hit corner three after corner three
and showing Tim's skepticism of Andre Iguodala wrong.
I mean, to be fair, all I did was make fun of Andre for missing one wide open three by like 6 feet. And then he came back and buried the biggest shots of the game up until overtime when James Harden took over. Which I don't know if we talked about enough. James Harden was unbelievable. Down the stretch.
For the shots he was making, apparently the last two-minute report says he committed a charge on that last floor.
I mean, that was a charge. That was a huge call in the game. However, that set that aside, because I'm not getting into this rough debate.
On that play, I'm like, I don't really care.
Yeah.
That was a tough shot. It was an awesome shot. I don't care.
Set it aside. He still hit a massive three. He when the Warriors were not making plays on the stretch, Harden was making plays. For a guy who, you know, say what you want about Steph, a guy who's really struggled in the playoffs hard and a lot in his career. That was a big moment for him. You know, that was impressive to see.
Game four is a big, big moment. Game four is, this is a series, or this is we walk out in five, and then apologies to Portland or Denver, but Golden State is going to roll whichever one of those teams wins that series, and then we get on to the finals. Well, I think that covers what we wanted to cover, guys. We get... Malika, the Bucks are your thing, one of your things. I like to say that you're on the Bulls suck beat, and that's
not
become
the
Bucks
beat.
Anything else we didn't cover that you're looking for tomorrow?
I mean, I'm curious to see if Eric Bledsoe bounces back. But the one thing that I will say, and I'm actually curious to hear your thoughts on this. At one point earlier in the season, what happened in Game One happened. The first time I saw it in person was in Indianapolis, and the four guys not named Giannis just could not hit a shot to save their life. Brooke could not hit an outside shot. Chris could not hit an outside shot. Eric could not hit an outside shot. And at the time, Malcolm Brogdon couldn't hit one. And so, during that game, Giannis was able to be double teamed more than he had been all season long because there was no threat from those other four guys. So those defenders, those help defenders could just, collapse in on him. And in game one, you saw that same thing happen. And I asked Bud after that game, I said, what's the plan when something like that happens? Does Chris Middleton revert back to taking those ugly long twos? Does Giannis just try to muscle his way through all of that? And Bud said, yeah, because the bet is it's not going to happen 4 out of 7 games. We don't have a plan B. Our system is the system because we'll make little adjustments here and there. I'm not a big adjustments guy, but the bet is 4 out of 7 games, that won't happen. And that kind of struck me as a, huh. And I thought of it again after game one when Bud said, yeah, we're not going to make any huge adjustments. We're not going to do anything real, real big. We're just going to get back to our game. And I said, what? Like, how can that be possible? How can that happen? And I'm curious if you think that that's a recipe of just, yeah, they can just do that. They can just bet that, try it again. If we fail once,
I'm
get back up.
I'm glad you brought that up because I think if they try more of those Giannis Lopez pick and rolls, I think the Celtics are going to trap that. I think the Celtics are going to be like, this is what you're going to do. We're just going to throw two guys at you and give Brook Lopez the ball 25 feet from the rim, and we're going to bet on. And, you know, then the Bucks don't have to do that. They can do Giannis Bledsoe pick and rolls. They can do lots of other things that are harder to trap. But they may decide we're going to put more pressure on Bledsoe. And by the way, gamesmanship, my favorite thing of the playoffs was Philly switching their matchups for game two of the series we started with so that Embiid was on Siakam and Tobias Harris was on Marc Gasol and Simmons was on Kawhi. Those are the headliners. And total credit, it worked. And then game three, they come out in the first quarter and a half back in their original game one assignments that failed. And then midway through the second quarter, they flip back to the game two assignments that worked. And literally, I think that was just – and I checked around a little bit – I think that was the Sixers just
mind effery.
just screwing with Toronto. Yep. I think it was literally just them saying, we got a lot of attention for this. They're going to prep for this for 2 days and have all sorts of counters set up. We're going to come back the other way, and they're going to be like, oh, that's weird. Like, what's going on with that? That's not blah, blah. Now we got to go back to this. And then right when they start doing that, we're going to flip back again. Yeah, I don't think there was any strategic, any like granular strategic reason. I think it was literally, let's just screw with their head.
There's a lot of mind games. You had Jimmy Butler go shoot by himself at Wells Fargo before game three for an hour. So the Raptors would move their start time back. You have, you know, Pascal being listed as doubtful today, and then he
played. But that turned out to be legit.
I mean, it certainly was legit. I mean, he played, but he was not good. But I can tell you this.
The Sixers thought it was fake. The Sixers thought he was going to play the whole time, and they thought it was fake. And it wasn't. It clearly was not fake. He wasn't himself.
Well, Pascal's a tough guy, so yeah. I thought he would play and give it a shot because it was such a huge game. But he, you know, to your point, it was not. He clearly was not right. But yeah, it's just there's been a lot of noise in that series, and I mean, there's always a lot of noise with Philly anyway. They're a fun team to be around. There's just always something.
Speaking of which, the most wild thing of the playoffs for me maybe was being at Toronto Orlando Game 5. Like, oh, you're analyzing the series and, oh, Toronto's moving on. What an impressive performance. And everyone's walking out. And then you see walking out with the Magic. Oh, yeah, Markelle Fultz is on their team. Like, that's a thing that happened this year, is Markelle Fultz is now on the Magic and not playing at all, attending the games.
Yep.
Dealing with the thoracic outlet syndrome, I think is what it's called.
That is what it's called.
And it was just one of these, like, you forget so fast. There's so much happening. You forget. And literally until he walked by me, it's like, oh, Markelle Fultz, Orlando Magic point guard. Crazy. Anyway, Malika Andrews has done fantastic work on the Bucks and many other teams this year, but the Bucks are the one that's still alive. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Tim Bontemps, thanks for letting us use your house.
Of course, buddy.
This is a very nice table that we're using right here. We have a very nice television that the Nuggets Blazers game is currently on. Hopefully we get a good game 4 in Boston tomorrow, guys.
Feeling good about it. I think we will.
Thanks again.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.